I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals. Get into that momentarily, but first I want to remind you that our I Love WMNF Minithon Drive is Friday, February 11th through the 14th. Show your love for the station by volunteering. We're having a training for phones, tally inventory, and more on Saturday, February 5th, 11 a.m. right here at the station. We're located at 1210 East Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard right here in Tampa. Please call 813-238-8001 or email help at WMNF.org. Thank you, and we love you. We do, too. So, again, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. We're now airing every Wednesday from 11 a.m. to noon. I want to mention one last time that Alan Watts will soon begin airing on The Source, WMNF's HD3 channel, presumably when we return to full broadcast power. So when there are specifics about those Alan Watts shows to report, we'll be sure to announce them right here on this program. Meanwhile, I'm really delighted to be bringing you another edition of Talking Animals, in which we'll discuss elephants, particularly orphaned elephants, with Dr. Dame Daphne Sheldrick. First, though, as always, and on a very related note, we're kicking off the show with an animal tune. This is Adrian Belew with Elephants, right here on Talking Animals.
Back to elephants on BBC 13.
That's one of the things we'll be talking about shortly. That was Adrian Belew with Elephants, an animal tune. An elephant tune, in fact. He's us in today's edition of Talking Animals. My name's Duncan Truss, here with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. In just a few minutes, we'll be speaking with today's guest, Dr. Dame Daphne Sheldrick, a Kenyan author, conservationist, and expert on raising and reintegrating orphaned elephants into the wild, work she's engaged in for some five decades, much of that time under the auspices of the David Sheldrick Wildlife Trust. We'll find out more about elephants, and particularly orphaned elephants, the work that David Sheldrick Wildlife Trust does on their behalf, and more when we speak with Dr. Dame Daphne Sheldrick in just a few moments here on Talking Animals. And as usual, we'll also welcome your questions and comments at 813-239-9663 or by email at dj@wmnf.org. Also, a bit later in the show, we'll step into the comedy corner, play Name That Animal Tune. The winner will receive a pair of tickets to see Robert Randolph and the Family Band and the Constellations, February 10th at the State Theater, a bill destined to raise the roof. We'll also have a brief chat with Barbara Lopresti, a local activist who's been at the forefront of a proposed new anti-tethering law for Hillsborough County, that would protect dogs from being tied up or chained outside for extended, often unhealthy periods of time. Right now, though, it's time for Animal News and Announcement segments, a detailed look at items of interest in animal news as well as announcements of events. So let's turn now to interesting and or notable developments in animal news. We'll also welcome your comments, which you can share on the air instantly by calling 813-239-9663 or by emailing dj@wmnf.org. So, let's talk turkey, as it were. Produced by the Talking Animals award-winning Rip and Reed News Department, our first item comes from a statement I received just a day or two ago. The British Union for the Abolition of Vivisection, a leading animal protection organization based in the UK, has joined with Canadian animal advocacy groups Stop UBC Animal Research and Animal Alliance of Canada to call on Air Canada to stop transporting non-human primates destined for the research industry. The call comes following a tip-off to the BUAV from a concerned member of staff at Toronto Airport that monkeys from breeding farms in China are flown into Toronto Airport. The monkeys are then held at the airport overnight for up to 15 hours or more before sent on another Air Canada flight to Montreal and their final destination. BUAV, STOP, UBC Animal Research, and Animal Alliance are calling upon concerned Canadian citizens and Air Canada passengers from around the world, includes you, perhaps, to contact the airline to show the strength of public feeling on this issue. From the AP in the last, couple days ago, there's this. Your sweetheart or your pet? Who would you choose to dump if one had to go? Most current pet owners said they would hold on to their spouse or significant other, 84%, but a sizable 14% picked their pet, according to an APPetSite.com poll. But Sally Rowland, 53, of Omaha, Nebraska, down in the dog first column, "I'm divorced, so that might explain it," she joked. The unmarried, like Rowland, are more apt to choose their pet over their mate, 25% among unmarried pet owners versus 8% among the married, etc. So, where do you come down on that poll if you were asked? Something to mark your calendar for the tail end of February. You might remember on Talking Animals we had Dr. Neil Bernard, a guest on October 13th, founder of Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, major figure in the medical world, the animal welfare world. PCRM does all kinds of great work and campaigns. We talked a lot about that with Dr. Bernard. But he will be actually in town Sunday, February 27th, giving a talk entitled "Food is Medicine." That'll be from 3:30 to 6:30 p.m. Ballrooms A and B at the Marshall Center in the USF campus, Fowler Avenue in Tampa. You can find out more, see about getting tickets, etc., by going to Florida for VoicesForAnimals.org, and they'll lead the way. So this is sponsored by Florida Voices for Animals and USF Students, protecting the environment and animals through knowledge. This came from radio station KSL in Salt Lake City. A Utah lawmaker wants to change the state's animal cruelty law to make it legal to shoot and kill feral animals. But the proposal is not sitting well with animal advocates. Officials with the Humane Society of Utah say the bill, sponsored by Representative Kurt Oda, is cruel and archaic and question its intent. Changes the animal cruelty statute so that it does not prohibit the humane shooting or killing of an animal if the person doing the shooting or killing has a reasonable belief that the animal is a feral animal. Questions arise in defining reasonable belief and how people can tell if an animal is feral. Yikes. But again, language in a bill like that be echoed perhaps later in our conversation with Barbara LaPresti about the anti-tethering ordinance in the works here in Hillsborough County. So we're going to skip a couple things here and just remind you that down the road a piece, but not so far down the road a piece anymore, April 3rd, in fact, it's the second Talking Animals Festival. It's going to be held at Lowry Park, adjacent to the zoo. And really excited. We're going to have a dozen or so bands performing animal songs and shaping up to be a really great lineup. Really excited about it. But, of course, we'll also have pet adoption. We'll have nonprofits tabling, vendors selling, all kinds of great food, vegan and vegetarian food, speakers, contests, more, and all kinds of cool features that we'll be revealing in the coming weeks. But anyways, applications, if you'd like to be a tabler or a vendor, you can go to talkinganimals.net, look on the festival section and download the applications. And those same applications are also available on WMNF.org. There's a little thing toward the top left-hand side. Participate in the Talking Animals Festival. And if you have any questions, you want to sponsor, volunteer, or have any other questions about the festival, just email us at talkinganimals@WMNF.org. All right, let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which involves animal-oriented comedy. This is the late Richard Jenny with Fred Robster on today's Comedy Corner. I'm Talking Animals.
So I'm out last night at a famous restaurant. I don't know if I can mention the name on the album. It might not be nice. It rhymes with Fred Robster. And it's a great place to go. Just don't sit next to the tank where they keep the lobsters. Very depressing. The lobsters always have that look of, any word from the governor? That's why you have to have like 4 or 5 drinks and then order. Because once you're drunk, you don't care who you send to their death in a boiling pot. Now you're drunk, and they're going, can we help you? And you got that Emperor of Rome attitude. Yes. Bring me the brown one. He amuses me. The impertinent one on the right. Seize him! Have him boiled immediately. Would you like a beverage? Wine! Bring me wine! Will there be anything else? Yes, find out why all the Romans in the movies have English accents. Quickly! So sad. They're like the only... Had a sign up, the lobsters were flown in. How cool is that? Think about that. Let's say you're a lobster, right? You've never been on an airplane before. A fair assumption. What else can you think but you've won the lobster sweepstakes? You're on a plane. Magazine, belt around the tail. Not bad. Not only am I getting a free trip, I'm earning valuable frequent lobster miles. Next thing you know, you're locked in a tank. Both your hands are tied. Everybody in the place is wearing a bib with your picture on the front of it. You want to talk to my travel agent right away? What happened to the friendly skies, huh? And they're one of the only animals that have to put up with being alive in the restaurant. If you go to a steakhouse, folks, no cow tank. You don't see them bring a live cow. What do you think of this one, buddy? This is the best cow we got. With a baked potato, I don't think you go wrong. Say the word, I got a gun, I'll blast the crap out of him right here. This is the best cow. Hey, put your head up. The hell's wrong with you? It's a customer. You want this job or don't you? Right, and there's the cow over there. Why don't you have a lobster? Why don't you have a lobster? And the lobster's going, why don't you mind your freaking business? The man has made his dinner selection, fat boy. Sir, if I may say so, a fine choice it was tonight. Now, thanks. He's the best cow we got.
All right. The late, great Richard Jenny with Fred Robster, taken from his CD, Greatest Bits on Duncan Strauss' Talking Animals. Our website is talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information, as well as archives and podcasts of past Talking Animals programs. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page, where you can like us, if you choose to. And our Twitter page, please follow us. You can also find announcements and ongoing updates about the Talking Animals Festival. It's all found at talkinganimals.net. It's nearly time to speak with today's guest, Dr. Dame Daphne Sheldrick. As I mentioned earlier in the show, Dr. Sheldrick is a Kenyan author, conservationist, and expert on raising and reintegrating orphan elephants into the wild, work she's engaged in for some 5 decades, much of that time under the auspices of the David Sheldrick Wildlife Trust. Named for her late husband, she is an internationally recognized expert on rehabilitating and rearing wild animals, and is considered the first person to have perfected the milk formula and crucial care for infant milk-dependent elephants and rhinos. In recognition of this pioneering work in the field, Dr. Sheldrick was decorated in 1989 by the Queen with an MBE, member of the Order of the British Empire. Then in 2006, Queen Elizabeth II appointed Dr. Sheldrick a Dame Commander of the Order of the British Empire, the first knighthood awarded in Kenya since 1963. So, with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org, let's welcome Dr. Dame Daphne Sheldrick to Talking Animals. Are you there, Dr. Sheldrick? Dr. Sheldrick? Uh-oh. All right. Well, I had her a moment ago. A little tricky with the phone call from Kenya, but we will come right back, and we'll try again. So stay tuned. Dr. Sheldrick presently on Talking Animals. All right, Dr. Sheldrick.
Yes.
Okay, thank you so much for joining us today on Talking Animals. I know you explained to me when I was first pursuing this that the phone lines are tricky in Kenya, and I guess we saw firsthand the evidence of that. But here you are, and I'm delighted to have you as our guest today on Talking Animals.
Thank you very much. You're very frank.
Okay, well, I will kick this up as much as I can and speak loudly, and we'll work this out for sure. So you've been caring for animals for decades, Dr. Sheldrick, working alongside, of course, your late husband, David Sheldrick, in Tsavo National Park in the 50s. Now, back then, as I understand it, you were rehabilitating orphans of all species, buffalo, zebra, impala, and many others. Sort of when and under what circumstances did your work start becoming increasingly focused on elephants?
Well, basically, it was the poaching that brought more elephant orphans in than the others. And the poaching was very bad after the death of my husband in 1977. And that's when the orphans started coming in. And there wasn't anyone else around that had any experience of raising the infant elephants. So the government asked me if I would help with the first two. And I did. And then they started coming in. And well, I've been doing it now for 50 years.
Yeah, I guess you're getting pretty good at it at this point.
Well, you never get good at it, you know. With every single elephant, you learn something new.
Yeah.
And they all come in a different situation and with different complications. And you have to know quite a lot about homeopathic remedies because they react badly to antibiotics. And, you know, it's a very... As I say, with every single orphan that comes in, we learn some more. You never know it all.
Right. Well, maybe since much of our conversation will revolve around orphan elephants, obviously, I guess this is the unpleasant point at which I ask you to explain. How did these elephants become orphans?
They become orphans mainly through all human activities, you know, poaching, of course, for ivory. As long as there's a demand for ivory, which there is in the Far East, elephants are going to be killed because there's a lot of poverty in Africa and people are corrupted by the temptation of money. And they fall in wells, you know, that are dug in dry riverbeds, and the elephants can't get them out, and then the cattle come and they're abandoned in the wells, or the mother's killed. Human-elephant conflict, you know, that...
Sure.
is becoming more prevalent with the growing population that are taking over areas that the elephants once used as traditional migratory routes and human activity, basically.
Yeah. Well, so it sounds like there's a variety of sources, but my sense is that poaching is kind of a key cause, and my sense also is that poaching has escalated in recent years. Is that an accurate assessment?
It definitely has. I'm afraid it has. Mainly in the Far East, the Chinese particularly are becoming more opulent, and they have. They all want ivory, and Japan as well, Indonesia, places like that. The demand for ivory, as long as they demand for ivory, elephants are going to be killed in Africa where there's a lot of poverty.
Sure.
It's as simple as that, and I believe that ivory should be banned totally. There was a ban in 1989, which only lasted for a few years. It wasn't enough for even one generation of elephants to be born. But the poaching was brought under control during those few years. But since then, unfortunately, the greed for money and everything has escalated, and ivory is still on the market.
And so apart from that 1989 ban and sort of the brief reprieve that afforded our beloved elephants, I mean, is there also been some other cyclical element to the poaching problem where there's been other factors that have allowed it to sort of decline at least a bit, and then whether there's a crackdown of some kind or someone else in some sort of leadership position, and then it kind of rises back up again? Or has it all been pretty steady apart from that 1989 ban and sort of the brief period afterwards?
No, since the ban was lifted, after the 1989 ban, poaching has increased, particularly with the advent of a lot of Chinese workmen doing aid-related projects in Africa. So the market is here now, and also a burgeoning human population that's taking up more land, taking up and growing crops where elephants used to roam, and, it's loss of habitat too, and the invasion of domestic cattle into the protected areas during periods of drought. Climate change is also having an impact on the elephants. So Africa is becoming drier, and what we've seen over the last few years is drought situations, not enough rain, which has driven the elephants out of the protected areas, into areas that have more browse for them. And the cattle have invaded the protected areas and occupied watering points and things like that and introduced disease. So, there are lots of factors that are working against the elephants, I'm afraid.
Yeah, boy. Well, this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, we're speaking with Dr. Dame Daphne Sheldrick, internationally renowned expert on raising and reintegrating orphaned elephants into the wild. We invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing dj@wmnf.org. Well, with everything you've just outlined, Dr. Sheldrick, I sort of fear or suspect at least that you may have more orphans there at the moment than in past periods. I mean, are you finding that's the, with all these things that you've described, that now there's more that you're looking after day to day?
Yes, I'm afraid 2009 was a peak year for us. We had over 33 little orphaned elephants in the nursery, whereas before the maximum we'd ever had in the 25 years since we've been operating was 12.
Wow.
So we now currently have 17 in the nursery. And, to raise an elephant, it's at any age, an infant elephant duplicates a human. So it's a long-term project, At any age, they're the same as a human child of the same age. So they're considered infants for at least 3 years of life because they need milk for the first 3 years of life. They cannot live without it. And so, to raise an elephant, it's a long-term project. It entails intensive care for up to 10 years.
Wow, for up to 10 years. Wow. Okay, because I was thinking it would be much shorter, that after that 3 years or so of their infancy, that then they would be in a position to perhaps be reintroduced to the wild. But I guess, is it just sort of a different elephant sort of case by case when when that infant is ready to rejoin the wild?
Well, you know, we keep them in the nursery for certainly for the first 2 years of life, where they're fed every 3 hours, day and night.
Wow.
And they need very intensive care because they're essentially extremely fragile animals. They can be fine one day and dead the next, and you never really know why.
Mm.
You know, their psychological depression and everything has an impact on the physical condition of the elephant. But we've learned that the sooner we can get them down to Tsavo National Park to the reintroduction stations, where they're still with their keepers and their human attendants until about the age of 10. Because after all, you can't take a human child of 10 and dump it in the middle of Russia and think it's grown up. It's not. They need protection. They need care. They need guidance. They need learning skills and everything. And you have to expose them to a wild situation for the instinct with which elephants are born. And they are born with a genetic memory, unlike us humans. But that has to be exposed to a wild situation to come into play, and that can take up to 10 years.
Oh, my goodness. Well, so just let's I find this whole process fascinating, as I'm sure our listeners do as well. Let's back up a little bit. So when they first come to the nursery, I mean, at least in that first year or two, I mean, what's involved day-to-day in caring for these orphans? Obviously, you've said that they need the milk every 3 hours. And what are sort of the main concerns and challenges, especially when you said, you know, many, of course, have sort of, you know, psychological frailty, given maybe how they arrived at the nursery. So what are the key concerns and challenges as you're raising these baby elephants?
Well, of course, the most important thing to an elephant is its family, just as it is to us humans. They're very human animals in terms of emotions, and they're very bonded to the family. So for a baby elephant to have lost its family and its elephant mother is a terrible, terrible trauma. So they come in totally psychologically disturbed. They've been rescued by what they consider the enemy. That's if they're old enough to actually understand what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's very intensive care from the keepers. And it's just not just one person per elephant. You have to replace the family with a team of keepers that are with the elephants day and night. And they actually sleep with them at night in physical contact with them. They need initially feeding on demand, because you have to get down that animal at least 18 pints of milk in a 24-hour period. Otherwise, it's going to lose condition very rapidly and die of malnutrition. So, you know, you've got to heal the wound. You've got to heal the mind. And the keepers are key in that. They've got to talk to the animal. They've got to touch it. They've got to try and replace what that baby would have in an elephant family. They've got to feel genuine love towards it, because elephants can read your heart. And, you know, it's very, very difficult to turn it around. We get lots of infant elephants that come in. They don't even want to live. They won't feed. They just want to die.
Oh.
And so, you know, it takes a lot of skill with the keepers to actually turn that round and get that little elephant to want to try to even live. And when a baby elephant starts to play and enjoy life, then you know you're on the right road.
Wow. So really, the relationship between these keepers and the young elephants is really, in effect, a surrogate mother.
Absolutely. The keepers are the family, and the elephants, you know, elephants don't forget. I mean, that's a saying that everyone knows, that elephants never forget, and it's absolutely true. They will love and recognize those keepers for life. And some of our infant elephants are now mothers of their own wild-born young. And they will bring their babies back to show the human family. And although they're living wild amongst the wild community, if ever they're in trouble, they come back. And in 2009, two of our young mothers that were nursery reared brought their babies back because their milk was failing. And they managed to get them back to the rehabilitation stockade where their erstwhile keepers were. And we rushed down dairy cubes and supplements and fed the mothers up and got the milk bar going again and managed to actually save those babies. But the worry is that if this is happening to our orphans, what's happening to the wild elephants? The toll amongst the wild elephants is absolutely terrifying.
Yeah, no, I, yeah, if you extrapolate from there, because it sounds like you're raised orphans that then become mothers, in like this example you cited about 2009, knew to come back to the orphanage and say, oh, we are in trouble, and I know where we can get help.
They do. You know, a lot of our elephants come back with snares around their legs, with arrows in them. And, you know, we've got a mobile veterinary unit that works at the Tsavo Conservation Area. And the vet attached to that unit will take the arrows out and have to euthanize the elephant, of course, and deal with it, give it an antibiotic and treat the wounds, and then off they go again. But it's a comfort to us to know that the elephants that we've raised, that we sort of regard as our elephant children, know where to come when they're in need of help, and they do. And after many years, they will turn up, and they will recognize their keepers that they haven't seen for many, many years. And it's not just all humans that they love, because they'll be getting another message from the wild elephants about humans. It's the individuals.
Wow. Yeah, no, that's really powerful and complex sort of relationship and how that plays in both both directions. And so, Dr. Sheldrick, I'm really then curious to know, you know, what's involved in becoming a keeper? Obviously, it could not be a more pivotal position. I mean, it must take a pretty specific type of personality and skills. What do you look for when you say, okay, well, you will come and work here as a keeper?
Well, first of all, the keeper is a man that just needs a job, and there are plenty of them here because, you know, what, about one-third of the population is unemployed. So a man comes and wants a job. So you teach him how to mix the milk, how to handle the elephant, how to talk to it gently, how to walk with it, how to communicate with it, and because elephants are very tactile animals, how to handle it and to touch it, because in an elephant family, a baby would be touched by lots of loving trunks. And then after about a month, you go out and you just watch the elephants and you see how they respond to their keepers. And so it's the elephants that actually choose their keepers. You can tell instantly if an elephant doesn't like a man, and he can't be an elephant keeper. And it's very interesting that we've now raised over 130 elephants through the nursery here, which is quite a big herd. And every single one of those elephants has had a favorite keeper, just one man. And he's an elephant whisperer. He's absolutely extraordinary. And we don't know why, but they all choose him as their special friend, their special keeper. They all want to be close to him. And, you know, if we've got a difficult elephant that just wants to die and won't feed, then we bring Meshach in and he can turn it around overnight. And we don't know what his magic is, but he's got the right heart.
Wow. Well, we don't argue with the magic. We just go with it. But Dr. Sheldrick, am I not right in thinking that other than that kind of situation, that at least when they first come in their real infancy, that it is actually important to not have just one keeper assigned to the babies on a given day or night?
No, that's very important. A different keeper will be in with a different elephant every night because men have to have time off. They have to have leave. They've got their own families and so on.
Yeah.
And the elephants mustn't be too attached to any one person.
Right.
And this is the problem with Meshach. You know, we rotate him all the time, and he's not always in the nursery. We send him to the reintegration stations as well. But wherever he goes, every single elephant that has met that man is absolutely overjoyed and over the moon to see him again. And it's quite phenomenal. In fact, I've put a thing on our website about it. This one little elephant, the smallest one we have in the nursery now, called Naipoki, she absolutely adores this man, and she actually talks to him. You know, she makes funny elephant sounds to him and fondles him with her trunk, and she's glued to his side every hour of the day that he's with her. But he's not with her every day. We make sure that he's not. So she's got to be fond of the other keepers as well. But she knows that he's there.
Wow. This guy sounds just like singular in his abilities and just gifts, I guess. But and Dr. Sheldrick, what because I think one of, if I'm not mistaken, one of your kind of major among many accomplishments over the years was creating the ideal milk for these baby elephants, these orphan elephants, to be bottle fed. Can you tell us what was sort of involved in arriving at that ideal formula? What sort of experimentation that involved?
Well, that was a sort of learning curve for me, you know, because everyone knew that elephant's milk was very high in fat. And in the early days in the 50s, you know, the only fat we could think about was butter and cream and, you know, cow's milk fat, which is absolutely wrong. And so we started increasing the fat with butter and cream. The elephant died very quickly. And then when we fed them on their skim milk with no cow's milk fat, they actually lasted a lot longer, but they died of malnutrition. So I knew it was a fat problem. So I went scouring the countryside for a baby milk formula that had no cow's milk fat. And the nearest thing to the fat in elephant's milk is actually coconut. And so the little elephants that come in, we give them coconut cream that you buy in tins now, you know, mixed in with their milk. That's the right sort of fat. And also they need supplements of coconut until about the age of 5. Otherwise they start getting a malnutrition, pot-bellied look, you know. So coconut is the key.
Wow.
But, we feed them on an artificial baby formula called SMA Gold Cap, which is made by Wyeth Laboratories in England. And to that we have to add extra vitamin C, extra coconut, and later on cooked oatmeal porridge. And they also have, if they've had to have an antibiotic for any reason, then you have to give them probiotics to restore the stomach flora. And so, you know, it's quite a tricky thing to raise an elephant because the milk is not absolutely ideal. It's not like mother's milk.
Sure.
But it can get them through.
Well, and it sounds like you, through considerable experimentation, have arrived at the closest thing that seems to really, really work and succeed in keeping these babies alive and going and getting stronger. So this is Talking Animals. My guest speaking from Kenya is Dr. Dame Daphne Sheldrick, internationally renowned expert on raising and reintegrating orphaned elephants into the wild. If you'd like to join the conversation, if you have a question or comment for Dr. Sheldrick, please call 813-239-9663 or email us at dj@wmnf.org. So, Dr. Sheldrick, I mean, all these years later, I mean, what's the most rewarding thing about the work that you do? I mean, have the rewards and the satisfaction changed over, you know, obviously what's many, many years?
Well, yes, it's 50 years, and, you know, I've been at it for 50 years. When you're raising an elephant, you've got to have the staying power to see it through. But the most rewarding thing is to see an elephant that came in as completely broken, both mentally and physically, recover, grow up, lead a happy and normal life amongst the wild elephants, and then have...
Dr. Sheldrick? Uh-oh. Okay, well, we're going to play a little bit of music. We're going to get Dr. Sheldrick on just for a couple more minutes, if possible, and if not, we'll move on. But we'll either way, we'll carry on right now with a little bit of music while we get her on the line. All right. Well, I actually did reach Dr. Sheldrick again, but we were lucky to get as much time with her, I think, given the phone situation, as we did. So, again, that was Dr. Dame Daphne Sheldrick from the David Sheldrick Wildlife Trust. The website is sheldrickwildlifetrust.org. They're also on Facebook. And, again, obviously an amazing woman, an amazing operation. And the website has wonderful, wonderful pictures of some of the current infants, including a couple of babies I'm fostering over there, thanks to a nice gift. But anyway, all right, it is the WMNF. It's Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to, of course, the Talking Animals Canyon version, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune. There'll be a prize, a pair of tickets to see Robert Randolph and the Family Band and the Constellations February 10th at the State Theater. To the first person. Who calls in 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal tune. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals.
One night Farmer Brown was taking the air. Locked up the barnyard with greatest of care. Down in the hen house, something stirred. When he hollered, "Who there?" This is what he heard. Ain't nobody here but us chickens. It ain't nobody here at all. So calm yourself and stop that fuss. It ain't nobody here but us.
All right, well, we'll take those calls as they come in or even off the air after the show. In just a minute, we're going to have a chat, a brief chat, with Barbara Lopresti about the proposed anti-tethering law she's been leading the effort on here for Hillsborough County. But first, before we speak with Barbara, let's hear an animal song. This, too, is something of a nod to Dr. Sheldrick, as well as our love of elephants here at Talking Animals. It's music. From Syd Barrett.
An effervescing elephant with tiny eyes and great big trunk, one whispered to the tiny ear, the ear of one inferior. That by next June he'd die, oh yeah, because the tiger would roam. The little one said, oh my goodness, I must stay at home. And every time I hear a growl, I know the tiger's on the prowl, and I'll be really safe, you know. The elephant, he told me so. Everyone was nervy, oh yeah, and a message was spread to zebra, mongoose, and the dirt. Dirty hippopotamus who wallowed in the mud and chewed his spicy hippoplankton food and tended to ignore the word, referring to survey a herd of stupid water bison. Oh yeah, and all the jungle took fright and ran around for all the day and the night, but all in vain, because you see the tiger came and said, who, me? You know, I wouldn't hurt not one of you. I much prefer something to chew and you're all too scant. Oh yeah, he ate the elephant.
All right, Syd Barrett with Effervescing Elephants. It's time now to speak with Barbara Lopresti. Mentioned the proposed anti-tethering law and that she's been working diligently on. So let's find out more about that directly from Barbara. Barbara, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi, Duncan.
Hey, welcome to Talking Animals. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
So tell us about the proposed ordinance.
Okay, well, at this point in the game, we have gotten the Animal Advisory Board of Hillsborough County to consider creating a new law that would basically add some elements to the existing ordinance to protect those dogs that are tethered. For those of you that don't know what tethered is, believe it or not, there are some. It means a dog that's being tied up or chained up outside. And quite often we see dogs that live their entire life chained up outside 24/7, 365 days a year. And here in Florida, with the elements, extreme cold and the extreme heat, we really need to put some laws into effect that would help protect them. And basically, that's what this ordinance is going to do. It's going to create some new guidelines for people that leave their dogs tied up outside 24/7.
And what are those guidelines, and how would this compare with other such laws on the books scattered across the country, including, of course, elsewhere in Florida?
Yeah. Well, there's hundreds of counties throughout the United States that have put into effect an ordinance that states you can't leave your dog tied up 24 hours a day. Currently, Hillsborough County does not have an ordinance that states that. This new proposed ordinance is not the language that we were hoping for, but it does add some protection. The language is quite vague. It does state that you cannot tie your dog up with that being its primary means of confinement. So we are trying to encourage the Animal Advisory Board of Hillsborough County to consider addressing that language. The next Animal Advisory Board meeting will take place this evening at 6:30. The actual address for that location, if I may give that out, Duncan.
Please do.
Is 601 East Kennedy Boulevard. And that's Tampa, which is downtown Tampa. The zip code is 33602. And the meeting will take place on the second floor at, 6:30 p.m.
And will this meeting, is this still designed to solicit input on the language of the ordinance, Barbara? Or what are some of the chief things that are expected to happen at tonight's meeting?
Well, we've been working on this for about 6 months now.
Mm-hmm.
They did offer an opportunity for the general public to post a comment online on their website. That deadline has already expired. However, you know, these meetings are always an opportunity for someone to make a public statement in regards to the issue. You know, I would encourage everyone to attend these meetings on a consistent basis. What you will learn there about those individuals that are selected to represent Hillsborough County in regards to animal issues in our community.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we all need to be participating in this if we have an ounce of compassion for animals.
Well, so Barbara, maybe you could explain to us what the objections are to a law like this, or
sure.
what prompts people to try to soften the language or make it more vague. I mean, what's behind those things?
Well, I'll share with you just some of the objections I've received from the Animal Advisory Board members themselves. A couple of those objections include they do not want to eliminate the idea that you cannot use a chain to keep your dog tied up. Some members of the Animal Advisory Board believe that that is the best way to keep a dog in check. If it's, for instance, a pit bull or a Rottweiler, they themselves have used that method to restrain their dog because they're stronger dogs. I would like to see that language changed.
What would you be comfortable with relative to the chain, non-chain issue?
There's many other different types of leads that
mm-hmm.
they can use.
Yeah.
And, you know, certainly there are other aspects of this language that they object to as well. For instance, that we were asking that a dog be spayed or neutered. It's going to be tied up because many times a dog left on a chain is susceptible to another dog coming into its territory, and it can't protect itself. So we're asking that dogs be spayed or neutered to help reduce the overpopulation of pets in our community.
Sure.
Is
there an objection to that to provision?
Yeah. Some of the animal advisory boards don't believe that they don't believe that that's an appropriate request. And so we have other issues. You know, like I said, hundreds of other communities have already enacted an ordinance, so this language already exists. But the objection we're receiving here in Hillsborough County is that this language is too strong for our community because we are a considered, quote-unquote, a rural community and a farming community. So many people use their dogs for working purposes. And, you know, therefore they object to anyone telling them that they can't keep their dog tied up 24/7. We're not asking individuals from the public to bring their dogs inside. We're just simply asking that they provide a different means of shelter, whether it's a garage or proper shelter via a dog, something that would provide adequate protection from the elements. As I mentioned before, it gets really hot here in Florida, and even most recently we've had some rainy days and we've had some cold weather. And, you know, when a dog is left outside all night long in 20-degree weather, it needs us as a community to have a voice and speak and let our Animal Advisory Board and Animal Services know that these dogs need protection.
Well, Barbara, then, you know, beyond those who may or may not be able to, you know, attend the meeting tonight, again, that's 6:30 tonight, 601 East Kennedy Boulevard, Tampa, 33602 on the second floor. But are there other ways? Is there a website? Is there an online presence otherwise? Is there a petition? Anything else that people listening who maybe are just hearing about this for the first time could do to show their support or help out in some way?
Yeah, I did start a petition 6 months ago in an effort to get the media's attention. And that petition website, it's kind of a long link, but I'll give it to you. It's PetitionSpot, so PetitionSpot.com/petitions/anti-tethering.
Okay, well, that's not, you know, that's not too too bad. I mean, petitionspot.com/petitions/anti-tethering.
Yes.
Okay, great. Well, Barbara, good luck. We know you've been working really, truly tirelessly on this, and we'll look forward to further updates. And, again, anyone who can make it over to the meeting tonight would be welcome and appreciated. And we'll keep our fingers crossed that we get a good strong law on the books here.
Thank you so much, Duncan.
Thank you, Barbara.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay. We have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. Again, we're now airing every Wednesday from 11 a.m. to noon, so we'll be back next Wednesday, February 2nd, when our guest will be comedian and cat fanatic Mark Maron, whose podcast, which we'll call WTF, has received a tremendous splash of publicity lately, including a gigantic Sunday New York Times piece and a smaller spotlight in Rolling Stone, just on Conan a few days ago. And rightly so, it's a consistently remarkable program, and over the last year or so, he's become one of my very favorite interviewers, and it's amazing the kind of things and the broad topics and issues that come from those conversations. So, and the podcast emanates from his house, the so-called Cat Ranch. So I hope you'll join me next Wednesday for that. And I also hope you'll visit our website, talkinganimals.net. Keep an eye out for updates and announcements about the Talking Animals Festival. Talking Animals broadcast outreach consultant is Libby McKenna. My thanks to her. Duncan Strauss, thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Stay tuned for the great Scott Elliott with the All Souls version of It's the Music, airing every Wednesday now from noon to 3. We're closing out today's show with an animal tune. This is Auntie Bollis with Elephant, which I love for a bunch of reasons, not least that the music, once it kicks in, really truly reflects the ambling gait of elephants walking. Not walking in a tiny enclosure at the zoo or from the circus train to the arena, but walking for 40, 50, 60 miles, as they typically do in a given day in the wild, maybe after they've been reared and released by Dr. Sheldrick and others. The sound of an elephant walking free, basically. It's going to take us right up to the NPR News, and then Scott Elliott and his great, great show right here on WMNF Tampa. Thanks for listening. Take care. Late breaking bulletin. Thanks to our assistant news director, Sean Canan. The Labrador Retriever was named most popular dog in the U.S. American Kennel Club made that determination. Yeah. German Shepherd ranked second, Yorkshire Terrier third. So congratulations, all Labrador Retrievers and those who love them. All right, it's WMNF Tampa. Thanks so much for listening. We'll catch you next Wednesday, 11 a.m., right here for Talking Animals.